Okay, so imagine, right, you're having like a major medical emergency, you're desperate for help, but instead of getting help, people think you're a criminal
Oh, wow.
and they use force against you. That's exactly what Dethorn Graham went through. And his case, Graham v. Connor, it like totally changed how we think about police using force in the US.
Right, this is a big one. 1989 Supreme Court decision.
Yeah.
Essential case, I mean, for anybody practicing law,
A bit.
especially criminal law, it's the bedrock, really, of modern excessive force litigation
Wow.
affecting law enforcement, individuals' rights, the whole thing.
So let's set the scene. November 12th, 1984,
Okay.
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Got it.
We've got Dethorn Graham. He's diabetic and he's having like a really bad insulin reaction.
Oh, so he needs sugar, like
Yeah, but
urgently.
right away. He rushes into a convenience store with his friend,
Okay.
hoping to buy some orange juice.
Makes sense.
But he sees this long line, decides to just leave instead.
Oh, I.
Officer Connor's on patrol, and he sees Graham basically run out of the store, thinks it's suspicious.
Yeah. Well,
So
the.
Graham's just trying to deal with a medical emergency.
Right.
But it looks like criminal activity.
Yeah, I
Talk
mean,
about a recipe for
it
disaster.
really is. Officer Connor, he stops Graham and his friend about a half mile down the road.
Oh, wow.
The friend tries to explain, hey, this guy's having a diabetic episode.
Right.
But Connor, he detains them anyway, wants to investigate further.
So things escalate from there.
Definitely.
Graham, because of his, medical state, he gets out of the car,
Okay.
runs around it a few times, then collapses.
Oh, no.
He's even unconscious for a little bit.
Wow.
More officers show up.
Yeah.
And even though the friend keeps saying, "Hey, this guy needs sugar,"
I see.
they handcuff him, shove him up against the car, and like throw him headfirst into the police car.
Oh,
They
man.
wouldn't even give him any orange juice.
Jeez, it's
Yeah,
just.
it's like scary how easily a medical emergency can be mistaken, especially when you've got like that intense interaction with police.
Especially in that high-pressure situation.
Yeah.
And it's made worse because Graham's injured now.
I was just gonna say, what happened?
Broken foot, cuts on his wrists, bruised forehead, a shoulder injury,
Oh, jeez.
all this because his medical condition was just completely ignored. Finally, Connor finds out that nothing even happened at the
I
store.
was gonna say, so like, what was even the point? He just lets Graham go without any charges.
Unbelievable.
So now he's left with, these physical and emotional scars.
Right.
And a really big question, like, what can he even do legally?
So he decides to sue the officers, right?
Yeah, I would.
Alleges excessive force under 42 USC section 1983.
Interesting.
This is where it gets really interesting legally.
Yeah, so this goes way beyond just Graham himself now.
Absolutely.
It's about setting a precedent for how we evaluate the police,
For all of law enforcement.
In situations like this.
So lower courts, they initially use a test from a previous case,
Okay.
Johnson v. Glick, and it focused on whether the officer used force in good faith or if it was malicious and sadistic.
Oh, so they're trying to figure out the officer's intent.
Exactly.
But then when the case gets to the Supreme Court,
Right.
they go in a totally different direction.
They do.
Why would they reject that approach?
Yeah, you'd think intent would be a big deal here, right?
I would think so.
But they decided to go with the Fourth Amendment's objective reasonableness standard.
Okay.
They thought that was the best way to handle these kinds of cases.
So not about what the officer was thinking,
No.
more about the situation itself.
Exactly.
More neutral.
That's a big legal shift. This has got to have huge implications for how we evaluate police conduct from now on.
Huge. This decision basically says anytime someone is arrested or stopped by police, the Fourth Amendment's protections against unreasonable seizures, they kick in.
It doesn't matter if the officers meant well.
I see.
What matters is if their actions were objectively reasonable,
Reasonable.
given the situation they were in.
Right, so that makes a lot of sense. It's a much more concrete standard
It is.
rather than just trying to guess what somebody's thinking.
Right, what was going on in their head?
But how do you even decide what's objectively reasonable,
Well,
especially in a crazy situation like what Graham went through?
right, it's not always so clear-cut.
Yeah.
So the court, they came up with a three-factor test to figure out this whole objective reasonableness thing.
Okay, this is where it gets real for our listeners.
This is important.
Let's break down this three-factor test.
Absolutely happy to.
I know it's going to be super important.
So first, they look at the severity of the crime.
Okay.
Second, whether the suspect posed a threat,
Okay.
an immediate threat, that is, to the officers or others.
Makes sense.
And lastly, they consider whether the suspect was resisting arrest or trying to run away.
Gotcha. So these factors, this framework, helps to like evaluate the police
right
much more methodically.
Provides structure.
Right. But let's go back to Graham's case now.
Right.
How do these factors actually play out in his situation?
That's where it gets really interesting. So let's apply these factors to Graham's encounter with Officer Connor.
Yeah, let's do it.
See how this whole objective reasonableness standard actually works.
Okay, take us through it.
Okay, so first factor, severity of the crime. In Graham's case, there wasn't even a crime.
That's right.
He was just having a medical emergency.
He wasn't a suspect or anything. No. Just a guy who needed sugar. So that factor's got to be in Graham's favor, right?
You would think so, yeah. Now, the second factor,
all right.
Did Graham pose a threat?
Yeah.
Sure, he was acting strangely because of his diabetic episode.
Right.
But was he actually dangerous?
Right.
Was there any indication he was a threat to anyone's safety?
Not really, no. He wasn't trying to hurt anyone. He was just struggling, yeah, with his medical condition.
Completely misinterpreted.
Yeah.
All right, and last factor. Was he resisting arrest?
Okay, let's see.
Well, he did run around the car for a bit, but then he collapsed. You know, he wasn't really resisting.
So that factor probably leans in Graham's favor, too.
It does.
When you look at all three together, it really does seem like excessive force.
It seems that way.
Handcuffing him, shoving him against the car, throwing him in head first.
Right.
Just doesn't seem right.
Especially considering the circumstances.
Right. It really shows how this objective reasonableness standard can be used to, like,
it's a tool.
Really examine how the police act.
To scrutinize their conduct.
It wasn't about what the officers might have thought or felt.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's about, were their actions reasonable based on the situation?
Based on what they saw and knew at the time.
This case really shows why we need a clear, objective standard for evaluating these kinds of cases.
It really does.
You know, when it's not always so obvious what's reasonable and what's excessive.
It's hard to draw that line.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the court also recognized that, you know, police officers often have to make these split-second decisions
right.
in situations that are unpredictable,
yeah.
potentially dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So they emphasized that the situation should be judged from the perspective of a reasonable officer on the scene.
That phrase, reasonable officer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of loaded, isn't it?
It is.
How can you define reasonable
yeah.
in the heat of the moment?
Right, when everything's happening so fast.
Or when an officer might feel threatened, you know?
Exactly. It is a balancing act.
Yeah.
You can't judge these situations with, you know, 20/20 hindsight.
That's true.
We have to look at what the officer knew at the time.
Right.
How quickly the situation was changing.
Right.
The risks that come with police work.
Yeah, yeah. So you're trying to see it through the officer's eyes, right?
Yeah.
But also making sure that they're held accountable.
Right. It's a fine line to walk.
It is, yeah.
yeah. So it's about finding a balance
yeah.
between giving officers the space to make tough calls.
Right.
But also making sure that they don't use excessive force.
Got it. I think some examples would help here to really see how this standard works.
I think so, too.
What if, say, Graham had pulled out a weapon?
Oh, interesting.
Would that have changed things?
I mean, if he had a weapon
yeah.
and was threatening the officer's safety,
yeah.
then using force to subdue him would probably be considered reasonable.
Right.
The situation changes drastically when an officer thinks their life is in danger.
Yeah, that makes sense.
When there's a weapon, the level of threat just goes way up.
Right.
And that justifies a different response.
But what about situations where it's not so obvious?
Like what?
Like someone's having a mental health crisis
yeah.
and acting erratically.
Right.
How would the reasonable officer standard apply then?
That's a really good question, and it gets to the heart of this whole thing.
Yeah.
The standard still applies, but it gets a lot more complicated.
How so?
Well, the officers would need to assess the level of threat.
Right.
Look at their behavior. Are there any weapons around?
I see.
What's the context of the situation?
So it's more than just reacting to someone acting strangely.
Right.
You have to think about the whole situation.
The whole picture.
Yeah, and decide how much force is really needed to keep everyone safe.
Exactly.
This seems especially relevant now, given all the attention on mental health.
Yeah, definitely. Especially with the focus on de-escalation techniques.
Yeah, like officers need to be trained to handle these situations the right way.
Absolutely. De-escalation should be the goal.
Right.
And force should only be a last resort.
But, okay, here's another question.
Go ahead.
How much information is an officer supposed to have?
Hmm, that's a good one.
When they're making these quick decisions.
Right.
Are they supposed to be like mind readers?
Ha, good question. The law doesn't expect them to know everything.
Okay.
They have to act based on what they know at the time, using their training, experience, their judgment.
So we're not asking them to be perfect.
Yeah.
Just reasonable.
Under the circumstances.
Given what they know.
Exactly.
And this whole conversation really highlights how important context is.
Absolutely.
When we're evaluating what the police do.
Right.
Like, yeah, the same action could be totally justified in one situation.
Right.
But excessive in another.
It depends.
Depending on what's going on.
Completely. And that's why Graham v. Connor, it emphasizes looking at all the facts.
Okay.
The whole situation to determine if the force was objectively reasonable.
Not just a blanket rule.
Not one size fits all.
Yeah. It recognizes how complicated these situations are.
Real world is messy.
It is. And this brings us back to Justice Blackmun.
Right.
And his concurring opinion.
Yeah, he had some reservations.
Right. He wasn't totally on board with just using the Fourth Amendment's objective reasonableness standard.
Yeah, he was concerned about those really extreme cases.
Yeah, like
where the use of force, even if it technically fit the rules, might still be really problematic.
So he was saying, even if an officer's actions technically met the objective reasonableness test.
Yeah.
There might be times when the level of force is just so shocking.
So egregious.
That it violates basic due process rights.
That's the gist of it.
So he's like a safety net.
Yeah.
To make sure things are fair.
Even if the law doesn't quite get there.
Right. Even if the law is a little too rigid. This concurring opinion adds a whole other layer, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
To this Graham v. Connor ruling. Makes you realize that the law isn't always about hard and fast rules. You know,
no,
sometimes you have to deal with those really difficult questions,
right?
And think about the bigger picture,
weighing the different values at play.
It's clear that Graham v. Connor is not just some old case,
right?
It's like still relevant today.
Absolutely.
It makes us think about police conduct, accountability, the rights of individuals,
all these important issues.
Yeah. It's about how do we ensure fair policing?
Right.
While also acknowledging how hard and dangerous police work can be.
Exactly.
Well, this deep dive has been super helpful for me.
Glad to hear it.
To really understand this landmark case.
Yeah.
And I'm sure our listeners feel the same.
I hope so.
I'm really interested to talk about the lasting impact of Graham v. Connor.
You too.
And what it means in today's world.
It's really important.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so in our final segment,
yeah,
we'll look at how this case has shaped legal strategies, police training, and the whole national conversation about police reform.
I'm ready.
Welcome back to our deep dive on Graham v. Connor.
So we've been talking about this landmark case.
Yeah, breaking it down.
Exploring, you know, where it came from, this whole idea of objective reasonableness.
Right, and how to apply that standard in real life situations.
It's complicated stuff. But I'm curious, what does all this mean for our listeners?
Well,
especially the ones dealing with excessive force cases, right?
Absolutely, that's a great question.
What are the takeaways?
I think for lawyers handling these cases, the biggest thing is they need to frame their arguments under the Fourth Amendment.
Really? Yeah. So not the due process arguments anymore?
Well, it's not that due process is totally gone. Justice Blackmun's concurrence shows that.
Right, right.
But the Fourth Amendment, with that objective reasonableness, it's just a much stronger base for these cases.
So it's about picking the right legal tool for the job, right?
Exactly. And evidence. Evidence is crucial.
Evidence is always key.
You need as much detail as possible about those three factors we talked about.
Right.
What was the crime? Did the suspect pose a real immediate threat? Were they resisting arrest?
Right. The more evidence you've got, the better your case is.
Exactly. And lawyers, they need to remember, it's not about what the officer was thinking. Like, did they have bad intentions? Were they biased?
Right, right.
That's not the deciding factor under Graham v. Connor.
That's a big shift, isn't it?
It is. It shifts the focus away from the officer's head and onto the facts of what happened.
What would a reasonable officer do
in that situation?
Right. That's the question.
Exactly. Your focus should be on whether the force used was objectively reasonable.
Given what the officer knew at the time.
Right. Right.
So lawyers need to be good at investigating.
Definitely.
And telling a story with the evidence.
Right. And absolutely. They need to build a strong case.
The details matter.
They really do. Eyewitness accounts, physical evidence, police reports, video footage if you have it.
Right. Put it all together to show what really happens.
Exactly.
But Graham v. Connor's impact, it goes beyond just court cases.
Right? Oh, absolutely.
It's changed how police departments train their officers.
Big time. It's led to a lot of changes in training and procedures.
Like what?
A lot of departments have changed their use of force policies
to match the objective reasonableness standard.
Exactly. And there's way more emphasis now on de-escalation techniques.
I was going to say, that seems to be a big focus now.
Yeah, recognizing and responding to mental health crises, using force appropriately.
So it sounds like it's been good for law enforcement.
I mean, it's definitely pushed for some much needed progress, I think,
in yeah.
how they approach these situations.
But are there any downsides?
Well, that's a question a lot of people have.
Yeah, has it backfired in any way?
Some argue that the reasonable officer standard, it makes it harder to hold officers accountable.
Hmm. How so?
Well, they say it gives too much weight to the officer's perspective.
Okay.
And doesn't deal with the bigger problems in law enforcement.
So it's not a perfect solution.
Not at all.
There's still debate about whether it protects officers too much.
Right, or if it's enough to safeguard people's rights.
Yeah, finding that balance is tough.
It's a really tough balance.
It seems like Graham v. Conner, well, it was groundbreaking.
Yeah, a landmark case.
It's not the be-all, end-all. Right. It's more like a starting point.
A foundation.
To keep talking about how we make policing more fair.
And just...
Especially today.
With everything going on.
With all the attention on police conduct.
And calls for reform.
Understanding Graham v. Conner is super important.
Absolutely.
It reminds us that the law isn't set in stone, you know?
It's always evolving.
Right. It has to change with society.
And Graham v. Conner is like a lens.
Yeah.
To look at these issues, to think critically about them.
Right. To figure out how we create a better system.
A more just system.
Well, we've covered so much in this deep dive.
We have.
We've looked at how Graham v. Conner has affected people, the legal stuff, and its impact on law enforcement and society as a whole.
All the big stuff.
It's a case that really pushes us to think, doesn't it?
It does.
About how we make policing better.
And fair.
And balance public safety with people's rights.
Absolutely. It's not about attacking the police.
No.
It's about making sure they're doing their job the right way.
In a way that's just equitable for everyone.
For everyone.
This deep dive's really given me a lot to think about. And I hope our listeners feel the same way.
I hope so, too. So we've been digging deep into Graham v. Conner.
We have.
A really important case.
Yeah, with a huge impact.
And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are thinking, okay, but what does this actually mean for me?
Right, right.
Especially if they're working on these excessive force cases.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What are the practical takeaways here?
Well, if I were giving advice to lawyers handling these cases, I'd say the biggest thing is stick to the Fourth Amendment.
So, like, really focus on that.
Yeah, make that your main argument.
More than due process.
It's not that due process is completely out the window.
Right.
Justice Blackmun's concurrence showed us that.
Right, right.
But the Fourth Amendment, with that focus on objective reasonableness, it's just, it's a much stronger argument in these cases.
So use the right tool for the job.
Exactly. And don't forget the evidence.
Evidence is always key.
Always. You need as much detailed information as possible about those three factors we talked about.
Okay, remind me. What were they again?
So first, what was the crime, if any?
Right.
Second, did the suspect actually pose a real threat? And I mean, an immediate threat to the officers or anyone else.
Gotcha.
And lastly, was the suspect resisting arrest or trying to run away?
Okay, so the more evidence you have for those factors,
the stronger your case is going to be. And another thing lawyers need to remember.
Yeah.
It's not about what the officer was thinking or feeling.
Right, like their intent.
Exactly. Did they have bad intentions? Were they biased? That's not what matters under Graham v. Conner.
It's about what a reasonable officer would have done, right?
Yes, in that specific situation. That's what matters.
So lawyers really need to be good investigators.
Absolutely.
And then present the evidence in a way that tells a story.
A clear, compelling story.
That supports their argument.
Exactly. And the details are crucial. Eyewitness accounts, physical evidence, police reports, any video footage.
Right. Paint a picture of what actually happened.
Exactly. But Graham v. Conner, it's had a big impact beyond just the courtroom, too.
Oh, right. We talked about that.
It's changed how police departments train their officers.
Yeah. How so?
Well, a lot of departments have updated their use of force policies.
To be in line with that objective reasonableness standard.
Exactly. And there's a much bigger emphasis now on de-escalation techniques.
It seems like everyone's talking about de-escalation these days.
For good reason. It's about recognizing and responding appropriately to mental health crises.
Right. And using force only when it's truly necessary.
And using it proportionally to the threat.
So has this case been a good thing for law enforcement overall?
I think it's definitely pushed for some much needed changes in how they handle these situations.
Okay.
But there are definitely some who argue that it hasn't been all good.
Oh, how so?
Well, some say that this focus on the reasonable officer standard makes it harder to hold officers accountable when they do mess up.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
They say it gives officers too much benefit of the doubt
Okay.
and doesn't address the bigger issues that exist within law enforcement.
So maybe it's not a perfect solution then.
It's not a magic bullet, that's for sure. There's still debate about whether it strikes the right balance.
Right, between protecting officers and protecting everyone's rights.
It's a tough balance to find.
It is. So Graham v. Conner, as groundbreaking as it was,
A landmark case, for sure.
it's really just the beginning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the starting point for a bigger conversation about how we make policing more fair
More just and equitable.
for everyone. And with all the attention on police conduct and calls for reform,
Especially now.
exactly.
Right.
Understanding Graham v. Conner is so important.
It's a reminder that the law is constantly evolving, right?
It's always changing, adapting to our society.
And Graham v. Conner gives us a way to examine these issues
To think critically about them.
and figure out how to make things better.
How to create a better system for everyone.
Well, we've covered a lot in this deep dive.
We have.
We've explored the human impact of Graham v. Conner
The legal intricacies.
and its lasting effects on law enforcement and our society.
And it's a case that should make us all think
About how we can do better.
how we can make policing more just and fair.
And ensure that everyone's rights are protected.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Graham v. Conner.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you learned something new.
And that it sparked some important conversations.
And we encourage you to keep learning, keep questioning, and keep pushing for a better world.